There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name's David Reed. This here is Danielle Ward.
Hello.
And that over there is Marek Larwood. Hello, Marek.
Hello there. Oh, buddies, it's attacking me already.
Straight away.
Straight away, right in there. Buddy is the dog, the fourth member of the team. Thank you for downloading us, listening to us once again, or for the first time. This week's going to be a bit different. Because
there's nothing on at the cinema.
It's not that. We had our first ever Film Fandango Live last night.
Your voice sounds very husky.
Yeah, you did.
It's because we had the first ever Film Fandango Live last night. I'm quite tired.
Do you do vocal warm-up exercises?
No, should I?
I've never done them.
No.
I remember sitting behind in a festival hearing all the other groups' performers doing their vocal warm-up exercises and thinking they were dicks. And then walking straight on and then halfway through the festival, make it like this.
Really important.
Yeah, warming up your throat. No, I don't. But yes, I think my voice is a little husky. But had a lovely time. A lovely time.
Yes, thank you very much to all the people who came from far and wide to the first Film Fandango Live, in which we showed our own films we've made, and the sound guy did not do the sound properly, so they were.
No, but if you watch them on Facebook
or YouTube.
Watch them on the internet and yes, the sound will be better. Unless you turn your speakers up really, really loud so it all distorts. But then you're getting the authentic Film Fandango Live experience. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we showed those and then we had a quiz.
I'm just impressed we all managed to make a film.
I'm impressed that you managed to do it within 3 days. Incredible.
Oh. And it was no really one's good. Impressed with me.
I'm impressed with you, as in both of you, as two people.
First time I've ever made a film. I don't know anything. I've never been in a film. The only telly I've ever done has been, Not the Week.
Do you think you're going to make more films after this?
I'd quite like to make another film. I'd like to know what happens next.
Yes, yours does leave a lot of unanswered questions, doesn't it?
Intriguing.
So we're going to talk about our films now. And if you think this is self-indulgent, we've done 84 previous podcasts talking about films that other people have made. So this is just for the live show. Would you like to talk about your film first?
Yeah, so I'd never made a film before, unlike you two guys. And don't really know much about angles and reverse shots and lighting and stuff. So I thought I'd do something really easy, which involved me walking around with the camera. And then looking in the mirror, and then quick cut into my face covered in blood.
Oh, you spoiled it!
Spoilers!
You spoiled your own film!
It reminded me of that Ralph Fiennes film we saw. The one set in the future, the James Cameron. Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name's David Reed. This here is Danielle Ward.
Hello.
And that over there is Marek Larwood. Hello, Marek.
Hello there. Oh, buddies, it's attacking me already.
Straight away.
Straight away, right in there. Buddy is the dog, the fourth member of the team. Thank you for downloading us, listening to us once again, or for the first time. This week's going to be a bit different. Because
there's nothing on at the cinema.
It's not that. We had our first ever Film Fandango Live last night.
Your voice sounds very husky.
Yeah, you do.
It's because we had the first ever film at Echo Live last night. I'm quite tired.
Do you do vocal warmth exercises?
No, should I?
I've never done them.
No.
I remember sitting behind in a festival hearing all the other groups performers doing their vocal warmth exercises and thinking they were dicks. And then walking straight on and then halfway through the festival, make it like this.
Really important.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah, warming up your throat. No, I don't. But yes, I think my voice is a little husky. But had a lovely time. A lovely time.
Yes, thank you very much to all the people who came from far and wide to the first Film Fandango Live, in which we showed our own films we've made, and the sound guy did not do the sound properly, so they were...
No, but if you watch them on Facebook...
Or YouTube...
Watch them on the internet, and yes, the sound will be better, unless you turn your speakers up really, really loud so it all distorts, but then you're getting the authentic Film Fandango Live experience. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we showed those, and then we had a quiz.
I'm just impressed we all managed to make a film.
I'm impressed that you managed to do it within 3 days. Incredible.
Oh.
And it was really good. No one's impressed with me.
I'm impressed with you, or meant as in both of you, as two people.
First time I've ever made a film. I don't know anything. I've never been in a film. The only telly I've ever done has been, like, Not the Week.
Do you think you're going to make more films after this?
I'd quite like to make another film. I'd like to know what happens next.
Mm.
Yes, yours does leave a lot of unanswered questions, doesn't it?
Intriguing.
Mm.
So we're going to talk about our films now. And if you think this is self-indulgent, we've done 84 previous podcasts talking about films that other people have made. So this is just for the live show. Would you like to talk about your film first?
Yeah, so I'd never made a film before, unlike you two guys, and don't really know much about angles and reverse shots and lighting and stuff, so I thought I'd do something really easy, which involved me walking around with the camera and then looking in the mirror and then quick cut into my face covered in blood.
Oh, you spoiled it!
Spoilers!
You spoiled your own film! Spoiled
your own film! It reminded me of that Ralph Fiennes film we saw, the one set in the future, the James Cameron
Strange
film.
Days.
Strange Days. It was like the POV stuff from Strange Days.
Maybe I'm the new Catherine Bigelow.
Catherine Bigelow, yeah, you might be.
Bruce Bigelow.
There's a lot of films of people just walk around with the music in the background, isn't there?
Yeah, like that. It happens loads, and I thought, well, you know, make my job a little bit easier here.
Why is it called Mayford?
That's the building estate on which it is set.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and it's really scary. And did you like the joke at the end of the in the credits, Marek?
In the credits, what it said, yes. I won't spoil that.
I know.
That's for people to... on the night when we filmed it, I did comment that it was basically someone, you showing your people where you lived.
Yeah.
An easy way of how to get to Danielle's house, but with a scary ending.
Yeah.
Mm.
So it happens if you come into my house. And as your brother pointed out,
yeah,
when the scary, unseen POV person goes through the door, because the camera pauses for a while they're shutting the door behind them, something that never happens in Halloween.
It's true. It's true. The POV in Halloween, he never lingers to make sure the door's closed properly behind him.
No one ever shuts doors in POVs.
No, apart from in my film.
This could be a seminal moment. It changes all the films. And that suddenly you've made all those other films that are really unrealistic and stupid.
Yeah.
It's like no one ever unlocks car doors in films either. All cars are always unlocked.
Do you know, it was quite tempting because it also plays...
I never noticed that.
Plays the trick of quite loud, but not in the way that... To be honest, not in the way that they do at the cinema where it's really quiet and then really loud. It's just quite quiet and then a bit
quite loud.
But that's because it was a little joke for all the listeners who knew how much I hated...
It was very loud.
It's very loud! What a loud film!
What other things are things like not opening doors and not and knocking cars happen in films?
No one ever goes to the toilet.
They don't flush the toilet.
No. They do go to the toilet, but all the ladies in films that go to toilets, they sat down while they wipe.
Is that not what happens?
What happens normally? They run around. Run around and rub.
That's why they go together.
The
they form a big wiping circle.
I stand up.
Well, there we go. It's a fascinating insight.
It's maybe not women, but Danielle.
If you're a stand-up wiper, why not? Why not email in some photos of you? Why not make your own film?
Called Stand-Up Wiper.
Yeah.
There must be other tropes in films.
I'm sure there are. Well, I mentioned one before that blew Marek's mind. This was quite a long time ago
about
now.
About cars
and clothes. People never in things set in the 70s. Everyone wears 70s clothes and drives 70s cars. Whereas actually in the 70s, people would still be wearing clothes from the 60s and 50s, and the cars from the 50s would still be around. But the art departments are too good.
I was doing a bit on this rubbish pilot the other day. I shouldn't really say that. I shouldn't say it was rubbish.
No.
But
Not that pilot. The other one you were doing was really good, though, wasn't it? You were doing two pilots. One was rubbish, but there was also another really good. I was trying to dig you out of that hole there, man.
And the costume lady... Basically, I have a bit of stubble normally, and it was one day's growth. And she goes, I need to trim that down longer than it was yesterday. I said, well, this is the next day in the script, so we don't need to. She went, no, we've got to cut that so it looks the same. And I said, this is the next... I said it again, but this time like this. This is the next day in the script, though, so why do I need... So even then, they make sure your hair's exactly the same.
Yeah,
continuity,
yeah.
They're so scared.
They are scared. Wow.
So that was my film anyway. Marek, your film.
I made a film, and...
Called Maths is Evil.
Yes. I started making this film literally about 3 months ago, and as I told our listeners, Dave McNeil plays the plumber. There's basically two plumbers in a house, and one is telling a throwaway story about his childhood and how he thought maths is evil, unfortunately leads to some quite sinister consequences.
Yeah.
But I started filming, and talking about the haircut thing, Dave McNeil cut his hair really short the next day.
Why?
But so short... that it was completely... You can see...
He should have complained to his agent.
Yeah, fired him from the film. And he didn't realise that it was a problem at all.
How much had you shot in the first day?
All the stuff in the kitchen.
Okay.
So suddenly, when the bitch scene changes for no reason, he'd have gone out of a door and his hair would have been short.
Fallen off.
There's loads of those changing location things in films where, usually at the beginning of a chase... where suddenly a character puts a coat on or takes one off because they've realised that they've shot all of this, the external stuff, and they didn't have a coat on. And then when they leave in the internal thing, they do have one on. So that people just inexplicably taking clothes off or putting them on as they run around places.
I watched The Bourne Legacy the other night, and there's a bit where the main characters are sitting in a car. And they've clearly had to explain, it's one of those just, what's it called when you just explain what the plot is?
Exposition.
Exposition scene. Just to explain everything. But they've actually had to put it in afterwards because they're slightly more tanned and the lighting's slightly different.
They're a bit fatter.
So halfway through the... Yeah, they are. They're noticeably
one of them's holding an Oscar.
The makeup and the lipstick is too red in it. It's a really bad continuity thing. But if you're watching The Bourne Legacy, but halfway through... when the two leads sitting in the car, there'll be a sort of cut to a different scene and the makeup will be slightly different and everyone will look a bit more tanned and podgy. And also, you'll notice that in Maths is Evil as well.
Did you struggle with maths at school? Is that what inspired you?
I had a really scary maths teacher at school. I just thought of it when I was asleep and I thought that'd be quite interesting. And I didn't know whether it was going to be... It's not supposed to be funny or... It's just in between... You know, it's just
really liked the gag that the man steals his shoe and so he has to hop.
Yeah.
It's great.
But it's actually really hard thinking of all the shots. I mean, we sit here and criticise all these films. Doing it is so difficult, thinking of all the shots. But we are doing it ourselves rather than having a big crew.
That's the thing that mine lacks. is because I wouldn't know where to start with thinking up all the different shots that you need.
But all it is just drawing a comic book.
Mm.
It's as simple as that, just drawing all the pictures and ticking off those pictures.
That's why comic books are so popular as sources for films now, because they've already storyboarded the whole thing. Sin City is pretty much a storyboard.
Yeah, exactly the same.
300 is exactly the same.
Yeah. But apart from that, what else can I say about my film? I talked about this, the guts. I tried to use tomatoes, they didn't work. How do you make blood for a... Because I know how to make fake dog poo.
Right.
Or fake poo, which is really good, because you get your Mars... Well, actually, you don't get Mars bars, leave white lines in it. So peanut butter and cocoa.
And you feed that to a dog.
And you feed it to a dog, and that's it. But you actually get a plastic bag, you cut the corn around, squeeze it out.
Oh, lovely.
You're making your own anus. Plastic bag anus, yeah.
Fake blood
is food
colouring, red food colouring, golden syrup, and some corn flour if you want to thicken up a bit.
Yeah, or you can use glucose, is good for it. There's loads of different things you can
use
for blood.
It's mainly sugar-based, though.
But that's usually so that it's edible, because it might go in mouths and eyes and things.
Any liquidy sugar, so, you know, honey, corn syrup.
Nutella you can use, actually, if you were
diet
red.
And then,
brown blood.
Yeah.
Like the queen.
and some red food colouring, and, yeah, that's pretty much it.
So I like to do a zombie film, but that's quite a lot of makeup and blood, isn't it? A
lot of blood in a zombie film.
And I don't want to give away spoilers to the film, so there's no point in talking about it. I won't talk about other things.
My blood didn't come off. It wasn't until the next day that it all came off. I just had two washes.
That's the problem with red food colouring. It does stain skin.
Stains your skin a little bit.
It's very, very hard to make a fake blood that doesn't stain.
If only blood was different. I mean, that's why... So many people make pornography is more popular, because it's easier to wash off.
Is that why?
Right?
Yeah. In terms of the fluid genres,
it's easier.
Tell us about your film, David.
Okay.
Yeah, I finished talking about my film.
I really liked your film, Merritt. I saw it again this morning after. Because I was sort of running around trying to fix the terrible sound when it was on before.
It's quite weird when you make it. It's like doing an Edinburgh show. I mean, my film's all... It's just all right. It's just a bit odd. But you just forget... You lose all sense of perspective after a while. After you're sitting there editing, just trying to get all the timing right.
Tell us about your music. Marek did the music himself for his.
I did the music to mine.
Marek John Carpenter, Larwood.
And it was just... Doing the all the music is done with one finger on a keyboard in different different notes at different tempos, and timing it all. It sounds as though someone's thrown a cat at a keyboard or a child's doing it, but actually it took surprisingly. It probably took me at least half a day to do those sounds on it. But I have to learn
Moog.
More chords. Yeah.
If you want to do like proper. Horror music, get a Moog.
Yeah, garage band's quite good for stuff, but all the loops are the same, aren't they?
They're recognisable now, aren't they?
Loving used by Adam and Joe.
Yeah. Well, should we talk about my film?
Yeah.
I made a film called Buddy Movie, which is about what our dog Buddy gets up to whilst we're recording this podcast. And it turns out he goes on some kind of crazy magical adventure.
Did anybody recognise the music you used at the start for the Buddy Movie titles? Did you recognise
it? No, where was it from?
It was the title sequence of Funny Games.
The really horrific
one?
Yeah.
Well, that's traumatising.
Yeah.
It's great, isn't it? I was really pleased because Dave starts with my favourite sort of title.
Yeah, the
big red letters.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And I noticed that you just the bit you recall when we filmed it, the bit you was me talking about being bald. You used.
Yeah, I did use that.
And
yeah,
me being bald.
Well, actually, it.
But that wasn't the bit.
I wanted you looking relaxed and sort of before recording it, and the bit I ended up using was the bit of you actually talking to Danielle before you thought we'd started recording.
This is a bit like that sort of Ridley Scott alien thing where he doesn't tell him about the bursting stump, doesn't tell all the actors. So yeah. You director duped us by making us sort of do some fake start.
Yeah, I did.
And then you used all the bit for the podcast about the Die Hard one.
Yeah, yeah.
Why did you use that?
In all honesty?
Yeah.
Because that was the only episode I still had the raw files of that didn't have the theme tune layered over the top.
But if you want to know what it's like where we're recording it now, you can watch Buddy the Movie.
Yeah.
You can see us, although we're not sitting in the right positions we normally sit in.
We cheated it.
But it's good fun. It's stupid as hell. I mean, basically the setup is Buddy eats a haunted sausage and releases a demon.
I think it's absolutely brilliant. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank
you. And I showed my girlfriend it, and she may watch it again.
But your girlfriend loves Buddy.
She's in love with Buddy as well. But I thoroughly...
Does she love Wetty and Wetty?
That's the name of the puppet, although it never comes up.
Oh, I thought he was brilliant. And the voice was brilliant. I thought Buddy did some amazing acting.
He's very well trained,
isn't he? He actually pulls all the different faces. I was convinced that I could tell. I thought he was actually quizzical,
yeah.
Surprised, suspicious. That's more than most actors can do.
We've taught him to do that. We've got too suspicious, quite too suspicious, good. And then when he does it, he gets a sausage.
Yeah.
He did go bonkers Friday night though, because he had too much sausage.
Far too much sausage.
So as you said, the live thing, you basically used, you fed Buddy sausages to get him to
no, to reward him when he'd done things right, because otherwise you can't maintain focus.
What would you help you personally as an actor in terms of reward if you did it right?
A yacht.
No, I think we'd use the exact same system,
but with money,
with actors. No, with
yeah.
Well, no, because
£10.
If every time you did a take, they give you a fiver. No,
that would be a really good way of doing it. So the director says, like, I've got £1,000 for this scene. We're all going to perform this scene, and whoever does the right thing does the best acting. Gets a share of it.
So no, it needs to be more condescending than that. If we all get through it, everyone gets £5.
I went to a film school class on Saturday, and basically what I seem to pick up from it is no one really cares what the actors do. It's all about making sure the lighting's in the right place and the camera angle.
Absolutely,
right.
The actors are mostly ignored in
most
productions.
People don't really care. It's like, well, if the actor's done an all right take, we'll use it.
But the brilliant directors have always cared. Like, if you read about how Kubrick dealt with actors,
yeah,
and stuff.
Reading about Kubrick now, I think he just sounds like he was on the ball.
I think he probably was.
There's two different types of directors and stuff. We do acting and stuff like that. There's some people I've worked with.
Yeah.
There's like the theatre ones who've gone into TV who are all performance based, who don't know anything about the technical side of it. Or there's some just purely sort of gifted technically cinematographers.
Ridley Scott.
Yeah, who don't know. They don't know. They're quite almost sort of on the scale.
Yeah.
They don't know how to act, to deal with actors. I've been on a set with something which I thought was awful, and no one was getting any notes. Loads of different performances.
Yeah.
And the director then went, do you want to tell me that? Or maybe he did with that way. Obviously he didn't, because it was all different.
Yeah.
But one I thought was really... I worked with one, but I won't say his name, but I thought he was really good. I will say, Matt Lipsey. He's done a lot of British television things. He was great just talking to people and behaving differently around different performers and getting them to do things differently with quite big, sort of famous performers. So that's our films. Obviously, this is a bit weird if you haven't watched them. So go to the Facebook site.
Go to facebook.com/filmfandango and you'll find all three of the movies there. Alternatively, you can go to YouTube and search for either Danielle Ward Mayford, Marek Larwood, Matt is Evil, or David Reed, Buddy Movie.
That was for anybody who didn't understand the concept of searching for a video on YouTube.
I was just reminding them what the names of the things were, you know, being helpful. Yes, and if you'd like to get in touch about them, then leave us a message on the Facebook wall or email us.
At Twitter.
No, email us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com. Okay. Or you can tweet us.
At filmfandango.
I tell you what, I'd love to read out some letters, wouldn't you?
Oh, I'd love to, Marek. But are there any?
Yes, there are. There are lots. And first of all, we should thank our friends from Guatemala.
Yes.
Who came to the live podcast.
Fernando and Jocelyn came to the live podcast all the way from Guatemala.
This is genuinely true.
Where's their email gone?
Well, we've got recordings of a few comments. Here's what we'll try and play now.
Yes.
This is Fernando's assessment of the film Fandango Night. You can hear it in this bit here. Boop.
Buenas noches, excelente show. Yeah. Excelente show, muy contento de estar acá y de ver los films cortos que prepararon para esta noche. Contento también de verlos en vivo después de escuchar el podcast en Absolute Radio y ahora el propio podcast que tienen. Bueno, es la página oficial que tienen ahora para el podcast. Eso es lo que tengo que decir. Felicitaciones.
All I knew is that he said that I was his favourite and he liked my friend the best.
So that was Fernando. For those who don't speak Spanish, he said, broadly speaking, it's really great to be here in London for the live show and see your short films that each of you made. It's been great so far. We have been listening since the podcast started with Absolute Radio and now on your very own programme. It's an excellent show. So thank you, Fernando and Jocelyn. They claim they were here on a visit anyway, but I think they were just being coy. They definitely came all the way to the UK just for that one night.
I've got an email from Sasha Mobley.
Sasha Mobley.
I'm not going to do an accent. It's really long email. I'll probably cut it as I go. Dear Film Fandango, I hope it's not too late to warn you about the very awful film experience called Man of Steel.
Oh.
Yeah.
Superman anger.
I had the option of seeing it in either 3D, IMAX, or just the regular. All right, and fancy, showing off. They tried to make up for the sensory deprivation of the regular theatre by turning the volume up traumatically loud. Two main achievements of the film. One, they finally did justice to heat ray vision in a way that not even the comics ever did. Oh, well, that's
interesting.
Bravo. Two, the art department get the record for designing endless variations of Kryptonian vehicles and objects resembling genitalia in homage to Flesh Gordon, especially Phallic with a pod sending Zod and Co. to the Phantom Zone. Is there a marketing tie-in with a sex shop? An endless parade of humorous middle-aged Hollywood patriarchs grandstanding intoning father figures, spewing eugenic and pro-life nonsense alleviated only by ridiculously boring CGI action sequences that I wish I could just be cut entirely and replaced with porn. Pornography. Well, I'm not sure I should have started reading this email out. No, this is very interesting. I wanted to warn Danielle, especially because I know how sensitive she is to loud noises. I'm not sensitive to them.
You're very sensitive to loud noises.
No, I just think it's a cheap device to use if you're making
a
horror film.
You used that in your film, but it was ironic too, wasn't it?
Yeah, like Ricky Gervais would have done it. Man of Steel. I don't understand why we've got a dark Superman.
They want to rival Marvel's ability to do lots of franchises that meet in one big franchise called the Avengers. And the only... Yes, buddy. The only intellectual property DC have of that kind, or their biggest one, is the Justice League, which is the Avengers for the DC world that has Batman and Superman and others in it. And
it's Spider-Man, isn't it?
No, he's Marvel.
Oh.
We'll get on to that.
It's Bumming Man, isn't it?
Bumming Man is only from Larwood Comics.
Wonder Woman's in it, isn't she?
Wonder Woman is the other big main one. But they have a real problem is their worlds don't really mesh tonally in terms of the movies they've had made. So
that's where you get Bumming Man.
They've darkened Superman to
but
try
you know
and make
why
the
worlds don't mesh? Because they're alternate universes, practically. Gotham City.
Oh, not
is
this again.
Metropolis. It's the same place.
Well, they
but
claim
it's darker
different.
Version.
Well, they're different cities, but that's not the problem.
But they're not,
the
they're
problem
both
is
New York.
One guy's a billionaire who punches criminals, and the other one is an alien god who can turn back time and do
also,
all sorts
Batman's
of things.
Batman's allowed to be dark. He's ever so sad his parents are dead. Yeah. Superman, his parents are also dead, but he's got.
Aquaman can be dark because all of his friends are fish and he can only solve underwater crime.
Bumming Man is a billionaire and also an alien.
Is he?
Yes.
Well, if anyone has seen Man of Steel and wants to tell us what it's like, I'm still in two minds about whether I'm going to go and see it. So do email us. Have we got more letters?
Yes, I've got one right here. Here we go. Hello, this is Connor from Liverpool. The main reason I wanted to write in was because I wanted to hear one of you guys try a Scouse accent. But I thought I would recommend some films as well. Mulholland Drive, Cool Hand Luke, Delicatessen.
You know what's interesting about all those films? I have started watching all of them and not got through them.
I really like Cool Hand Luke's very good, and Mulholland Drive.
Mulholland Drive's very good. Delicatessen's very good.
I haven't seen that since it first came out. I was about 5 years old, I think. Thanks for that. Yes, watch all of those films that Con recommended.
Watch them. Now, we had a competition last night at Film Fandango Live, which we generously donated our own DVDs as a prize, didn't we?
Yeah.
I donated Starship Troopers.
A flipper version.
A flipper version, which probably is worth quite a lot on eBay, I would have thought.
I'd never even heard of this flipper
version. Yeah, when DVDs first came out. Before they were dual layer, they were flippers and you had to turn them over like a vinyl.
We'll be honest, Matt, we just looked for things that we had two copies of, and Starship Troopers was one of them. Have we got two copies of The Descent?
I think so.
You didn't give that away, you gave away the
ward.
But that's why, because we live together, we knew if we gave away one copy of Starship Troopers, we already had another copy, because we've got a copy each.
Okay, so 2 - 1 = 1. What are you trying to tell me? If you have two DVDs and you take away one DVD, there's one DVD left.
That's what we're trying to tell you.
I don't understand this concept.
I gave away The Ward, a film that I have never seen. John Carpenter's The Ward.
Yeah, I've not heard good things. He's sort of gone off the boil, hasn't he, Carpenter?
He didn't win an award for it, did he?
No, he didn't.
And you gave away
24-hour Party People, which I watch the other week.
And we've talked about it, and it's a wonderful, wonderful film. And these DVDs were won by Jack Heron?
I don't want to know his surname.
Not Jack Cooper.
His name is Jack, and he was very nice, and he was wearing
He was really good looking.
He was wearing a T-shirt with, what does it say on it?
Easy Rider.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jack Henderson was his name.
Looking for a man, come and meet Jack Henderson. I thought he was really
attractive. Stop pimping out our listeners.
He's by himself and he was really good looking.
But maybe you should talk about what he was like as a person. Yeah. It's not all
about. He was with his friend Alex as well.
Yeah.
He wasn't by himself.
I know. I'm just.
Okay. Well, I spoke to Jack. He was very nice.
I mean, you're not doing this just to look at good-looking people.
Clearly not.
Is that why you're making this podcast? To try and meet young men in tight T-shirts?
One.
Oh, well. Well, fair play. Sorry.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, this is what Jack had to say for himself.
Have you seen all the films that we gave you?
The only one I haven't seen is The Ward. It is on my to-see list.
I haven't seen it, and I owned it.
I've heard mixed reviews, but I'm like I said, like John Carpenter is my second favourite director, so I'm pretty excited to see it.
A good win then.
So a good win, but I do really like 24-hour Party People.
So what's your favourite John Carpenter film?
My favourite John Carpenter film? That's actually a really hard question. Can I do a top three?
Yep.
Okay, Assault on Precinct 13.
Yep.
Big Trouble in Little China. An underappreciated masterpiece, I think. And also The Same as They Live for that.
I've not seen They Live.
Have you not?
No.
But They Live is really cool. It's just... It's a really original idea, actually. I can't believe it was 88, so I can't believe no one had ever done that before. It's when he gets the glasses and you can see that...
Right, well, Robocop. We saw Robocop, didn't we?
Not just us, but all 44 people who came along.
All 70 people in that room.
Yeah. All the 8 billion people who came along came to watch Robocop.
All the people, so many people.
Not that many people.
Not that many, but we had some people. And Robocop, I've not seen it in a while. I bloody love it, though. It just confirmed for me what a good film it is.
It's strange when you watch these films. I was talking to quite a lot of people afterwards, and they said the Ed 209, which is the famous robot in it.
Yes.
Looking back, I didn't remember it being that much... like a stop motion robot.
Yeah, yeah, it's and they proper were, Ray Harryhausen stuff.
Yeah,
isn't
a couple
it?
Of the guys, two of the mathematicians I was talking to, very nice men, said it after it was Ray Harryhausen, but it's not actually him. It's just
no, it's very much in his style.
Yeah,
of that fighting things that aren't there. You know, the famous skeleton. Excuse me, skeleton scene from Jason and the Argonauts is
now they
particularly
just get
strong.
Andy Serkis to put on a leotard.
It's true.
It's him, literally Andy Serkis with his whole body of nipples, whatever it is, jumping around.
I'd forgotten how much Ed 209 is actually a comic character in this first one. He's not sort of, he's not really the villain. He's light relief. He's only got comedy routines, really.
Yeah. Yeah, all I remembered, it was there's great set pieces I remembered. I didn't really remember the rest of the film. Just the big set pieces in this, which always there are great ones. I didn't remember, and a lot of people commented on our Facebook wall as well and on Twitter that they didn't realise how sort of tongue-in-cheek and funny it is. Because we, obviously, our generation watched it when we were like 14, 15 as an action film.
Yeah.
And now it's quite a sort of almost camp comedy, would you
well,
say?
But it's 80s, isn't it? It's got an 80s, 70s, early 80s feel to it, which is, we've lost that in our films. And certainly that could never be more stark than in the remakes we've been making of those films. I mean, Total Recall, I didn't see it, but I've talked to people who did. And from what I've heard, it was humourless, the remake of Total Recall, which, of course, was a Verhoeven film and very much in the exact same style of its sort of tongue-in-cheek, but also quite clever. It's satirical. It's about something.
But
it's not just nonsense.
Style as well. I mean, yeah. If you think of his big action films as just action films, then you're missing.
Yeah, you're quite wrong.
As a director, it's because he puts in. I mean, what he's really good at is the stupid satirical adverts.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten how many of those are in RoboCop, because you remember Starship Troopers for having them all in there.
Do you want to know more? Yeah, but RoboCop's got the I'd buy that for a dollar, and then loads of newsreels and adverts
yeah,
for
and
products
great
and things.
At that sort of thing.
There's a great thing that you told me about the Twitter.
What was that?
About the RoboCop.
Oh yeah, yeah. If you tweet anything with the word RoboCop in it, there's an account that replies to you from that mustachioed guy who's in the comedies on the TVs. So then he just replies to you, "I'd buy that for a dollar."
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Everything you ever put RoboCop in.
How would you describe the Verhoeven style? It's a bit. It's not like Cronenberg-y, but it's a weird. There's a similar feel to it. I don't know if it's all shot in a Pacific era. But that sort of futuristic, but quite.
But he does have the marriage of man and machine. I mean, obviously, RoboCop literally does that, but also with the technology side of things. I mean, I don't know, because also Verhoeven made Showgirls, which doesn't do any of this, but it still is a satire of that. I mean, isn't Verhoeven famously put more chitch in it? I want to see more chitch in this.
Yeah, but it's. I mean, you sort of have to view his sex films and his sci-fi separately, I think.
In Starship Troopers, he's got like a naked shower scene for no real...
No, well, the interesting thing is, it's the same in RoboCop as well. And it's very interesting because he's done it... It's not...
Just put more titch in it.
It's not gratuitous. It is and it isn't. Because in both films, there's just like... Co-ed, it's not educational, but shared showers. But it's completely unsexual for the characters involved. That's what's sort of interesting about it. He's using it to tell a story. In both Starship Troopers and RoboCop, it's just naked people talking about their careers. That's all they're talking about. And they're so desexualized and just sort of career-driven. It's quite interesting.
Like
it's
in the future dystopia,
yeah.
There is no real gender divide.
And maybe there's no real sexual desire either, other than towards prostitutes in his films.
Yeah,
it's in a very American dystopia of there's only pornography and prostitution, and there's no real wholesome sex anymore.
Isn't it lovely how innocent RoboCop is?
He's a very innocent man. I really love.
Well, he eats sort of baby food.
Yeah, like that's the point of him, isn't it? I mean, there's loads of it in there. Peter Weller, I think, does a fantastic job. You forget that he is doing the robot, but making
so,
it such an inhabited character.
When we're at school we watch RoboCop, and I was talking to people up this, we tried to work out how the RoboCop walks. We thought it was the neck first, and then moving the body as a separate...
But it's sometimes the other way around.
Yes, because there's one moment he walks down the corridor, and I thought, oh, it's neck first, then the body. And then he did the body first, then the neck. Oh, it's just... All this time we were doing neck then body at school, we were completely wrong.
It was a great shame that in Star Trek Into Darkness, Admiral Robocop didn't just, as an in-joke, walk that way in one shot or something.
It's a brilliant walk.
Yeah. And the whole thing of he, you know, his partner recognises him because he does the gun spinny thing, which is only an affectation to please his kid and stuff.
Yeah, and his flashbacks are... so sort of mawkish they are, purposely comical, aren't they?
Yes. I love how Verhoeven makes almost everyone super earnest, but then they're made to look ridiculous for being so earnest, whereas other filmmakers wouldn't. They would just want their characters to all look cool. Like, he particularly, in this era, he loved his henchmen to be bald guys with massive glasses. It's the same in Total Recall as well. Michael Ironside's sidekick is a bald guy with massive glasses.
I've mentioned this before on the podcast, but and I mentioned it last night as well. The difference between the TV edit of Robocop, which was the only version that I'd seen until we went to the Prince Charles Cinema a couple of years ago to see Robocop at the cinema, it's a different film. Like, it's so different. It's not even Die Hard badly dubbing the swearing out. Yeah. It is an entirely different...
But they do that in Robocop as well. As well as cutting scenes entirely, the graphically violent ones, they redubbed it to have no swearing in as well.
I mean, because the toxic waste scene from Robocop...
It's one of the best scenes.
It's absolutely amazingly horrific, and I'd never seen it.
Yeah.
Until I was in my 30s.
I know.
There is someone tweeted about, I think it's called Robocop Edited and Redubbed for TV. Look up on YouTube one of the redub things. I think, or can someone find it, put on our Facebook page?
Yeah.
And they show the original next to the dubbing. And it's some of the greatest bits of dubbing in this film ever. So it's worth just watch the original film, then go to YouTube and watch putting Robocop dubbed. And you'll see the remarkable differences between the Funster and stuff like that they call people. Yeah. It's great.
Monkey Funster.
Yeah. I thought it was Muddy Funster.
Muddy Funster.
I'm sure it was. There's a scene in the toilets where Dick Jones and the other guy are arguing. And they're great villains. They're both
so
great actors.
So good. I mean, the guy playing Dick Jones is the same villain who plays Cohagen in Total Recall.
He's a Beverly Hills Cop boss, isn't he, as well?
Yeah, he's one of the best... 80s douches in cinema, I think. Him and actually the guy who is the young up-and-coming guy at OCP who is in charge of the Robocop program is also a brilliant 80s douche.
How come in the 80s they're really good at coming up with corporate brands and we don't get that anymore?
In OCP or
OCP,
the Weyland-Yutani Corporation.
Weyland-Yutani and Nexus 6 that sort of business. And now there just isn't that care and attention put in.
It's Ronnie Cox who plays Dick Jones. And the other great actor is Miguel Ferrer, who plays Bob Morton. You recognise his face. He's been in loads of stuff.
He's in Hot Shots Part Deux as the guy who... Topper Harley teaches to kill again, and that's his emotional arc.
He's brilliant.
He's really good.
No one at the moment seems to be making films that are really fun sort of Saturday night films that are also clever. It doesn't seem to be that. They either have to make action films that are so... It's just action.
Superhero one. Just relentless superhero films.
It's
the same story over and over again.
Or they're a bit... you know, sincere, and they're a bit too, yes, a guy going through really tough things and he has to come through the other side. There's no big, dumb but clever.
There's no Die Hard. There's no film that feels like Die Hard.
Yeah, but there were loads, weren't there? Like this, Robocop, Total Recall, a Beverly Hills Cop I loved as well, and that came out.
Yeah, that was
all
great.
These sort of fun...
Those big Saturday night films.
Yeah, exactly what you said, basically.
Exactly what I said.
But even I'd class sort of Gremlins in that genre as well, of like, it's got proper horror in it, but it's also got its tongue in its cheek and it's very silly and funny at the same time.
I mean, if I was like 18 now, I don't think I'd go to the cinema. I don't think I'd be a film fan.
But the 80s similar thing again this year, like Robocop and Gremlins, are much better than the stuff that's coming out now.
Yeah.
Much better. I've got a book where I've put down every single mark of each film I've seen this year.
Yeah.
So at the end of the year, I can tell you exactly how many films I've seen and what are the best films. That's something to look forward to, isn't it?
There are good films being made, but they're not the big blockbusters. The blockbusters are so disappointing these days. That's the thing. I want to go and see a blockbuster that I can really love and come out of the cinema thinking that was great because it was big and stupid but also clever and witty, and you just don't get that.
Ghost Protocol was at least fun.
Yes,
because Brad Bird directed it and he brought in some of the fun from Pixar. There's still not as much as 80s movies had, but you know, at least there was some of it there.
Yeah, no, Ghost Protocol was actually probably the last big silly film
I've not seen that.
It's fun.
Oh, it's like the IMAX Burj Khalifa bit.
Great.
So how many Davids would you give Robocop?
10.
I think I give it 10. I think it's one of my 10s.
And give it...
Come on, Mary.
I think I'd give it a 9.
What's your favourite Verhoeven?
Showgirls. I think Robocop, really? And Showgirls.
Showgirls is my favourite.
Basically, I'd like the top half of Robocop with the bottom half of Showgirls.
Oh. But where would she keep her gun?
Mm.
Robocop would have a scene where he proves he's got his period.
Yo, yeah.
And he'd rub ice on his breastplate.
But when I've seen Showgirls, it's always been really enjoyable.
Showgirls is a really,
it's
really
a
good
preposterous film. It's so stupid. I sort of love it. But yeah, I think Robocop's my favourite Verhoeven. And then I'd probably put Total Recall and Starship Troopers equally next.
Yeah, I really enjoyed both of those. Yeah, great. And Showgirls now that would be a cult hit though, isn't it? Showgirls.
Yeah.
It shouldn't really be. Did it win Razzies and stuff like that?
I think it might have done. Oh yeah. But when you put it up against the other silly exploitation things like Striptease, and I watched Burlesque. I don't know why I watched Burlesque. the Christine Aguilera, Cher, Stanley Tucci film. Which is a bit like
terrible.
That. Showgirls is so much better because it's really clever.
Mm. It's just fun. It's fun, isn't it?
Made me want to watch Showgirls was Adam and Joe's Show Toys spoof of it.
Yeah, I've not seen
good.
That.
It was good.
So that's about it, is it?
Yeah.
I've got to saw a really great film, which I haven't seen before. I should have seen.
What's that?
It's one of the best films I've seen this year. A Serious Man, Coen Brothers.
Oh yes.
That got absolutely panned, didn't it?
He got a Bromley for the best. He got nominated for Best Picture.
Oh, did it?
I think it's just up there. It's up there with all
really?
The.
Really, I didn't see it. It was one of those who just sort of passed me by. I've got to go see
you
that.
You must
and then
get that out. I thought it was a great bit of cinematography.
Really interesting trailer. Like the rhythmic trailer.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just thought it shows all the small things. You're sick of watching these action films, which people talked about, and noisy films. It's all this. It's humour in the odd bits of inflections and looks and small details, and it looks beautiful.
Are any of you excited about Alpha Papa?
I always worry about British transfer of TV characters to a movie, but
I was thinking of Barbara Popper or something, old 70s kids thing, but I realise you're talking about
Alan Partridge.
Yes, I am very excited about it.
I hope it'll be funny, yeah.
I mean, it's still going to be better than anything else that comes out that week.
Yeah,
obviously. But yeah, I know what you mean about transferring a small.
It's thing. Movie comedy, so I think, for some reason, it's really, really hard to do. And
because they're completely different scales.
Yes.
Like the humour from Alan Partridge is different from the humour. But you know what? I mean,
They're the best people, and it's the same people still doing it, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Peter Bainham has, you know, he's been nominated for Oscars for his comedy writing for films now. So, you know, he's got, there's experience there. It's not just going to be a long TV episode.
Yeah.
No, I am looking forward to it.
And there's that World War Z.
You're
might
still
have to
looking
go and watch
forward
it.
To, yeah.
I think I might go and see that. Joss Whedon's Much Ado About Nothing is out this week as well, which looks interesting.
I hate film Shakespeare things.
But it's got Amy Acker in it.
Yeah.
She Acker Bilk's daughter.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, should we wrap it up?
He calls her his little clarinet. Well, we'll be back next week with more films. So in the meantime, why not think about some stuff and email us at dearfilmfandango@gmail.com and watch our short films. We spent, in total, probably a week on them. So,
I think more than that.
You think?
Yeah.
I am really happy to concede that mine isn't the best. Found it a bit rude. Someone posted under one of them, they'll have to do well to beat the other two will have to do well to beat this. It's not a competition.
Not a competition, but the buddy film is the best.
And Marek's is the second best.
So, but yours is just one shot.
Yeah.
It's not a competition. It's all subjective.
Well, watch them and tell us what you think.
And thank you to all the people who came along to our live night.
Yes, hopefully. It was a great success. Well, more importantly, we had a lovely time. So that means we'll probably do it again sometime.
Oh, and tell us what you would like to see maybe in a live night would help us
out. Yeah, what film would you want to see on the big screen? Tell us, and hopefully we'll put it on. All right, we will be back next week. Keep watching the films. Bye.
Bye. Bye now.
In Halloween.
It's true. The POV in Halloween, he never lingers to make sure the doors close properly behind him.
No one ever shuts doors in POVs.
No. Apart from in my film.
This could be a seminal moment. It changes all the films, and that suddenly you've made all those other films look really unrealistic and stupid.
Yeah.
It's like no one ever unlocks car doors in films either. All cars are always unlocked.
It was quite tempting because it also plays.
I never noticed that.
Plays the trick of quite loud, but not in the way that, to be honest, not in the way that they do at the cinema where it's really quiet and then really loud. It's just quite quiet and then a bit
quite loud.
But that's because it was a little joke for all the listeners who knew how much I hated.
It was very loud.
It's very loud. What a loud film.
What other things are things like not opening doors and not and knocking cars happen in films?
No one ever goes to the toilet.
They don't flush the toilet.
No. They do go to the toilet, but all the ladies in films that go to toilets, they sat down while they wipe.
Is that not what happens?
What happens normally? They run around. Run around and rub.
That's why they go together.
The
they form a big wiping circle.
I stand up.
Well, there we go. It's a fascinating insight.
It's maybe not women, but Danielle.
If you're a stand-up wiper, why not? Why not email in some photos of you? Why not make your own film?
Called Stand-Up Wiper.
Yeah.
There must be other tropes in films.
I'm sure there are. Well, I mentioned one before that blew Marek's mind. This was quite a long time ago
about
now.
Cars
and clothes. People never in things set in the 70s. Everyone wears 70s clothes and drives 70s cars. Whereas actually in the 70s, people would still be wearing clothes from the 60s and 50s, and the cars from the 50s would still be around. But the art departments are too good.
I was doing a bit on this rubbish pilot the other day. I shouldn't really say that. Shouldn't say it was rubbish.
No.
But
Not that pilot. The other one you were doing was really good, though, wasn't it? You were doing two pilots. One was rubbish, but there was also another
never
really good.
Anything good.
I was trying to dig you out of that hole, there, man.
And the costume lady. I have a bit of stubble normally, and it was one day's growth. And she goes, "Oh, I need to trim that down longer than it was yesterday." And I said, "Well, this is the next day in the script, so we don't need to." She went, no, we've got to cut that so it looks the same. And I said, "This is the next." I said it again, but this time like this. This is the next day in the script, though, so why do I need? So even then, they make sure your hair's exactly the same.
Yeah,
continuity.
Yeah.
They're so scared.
They are scared. Wow.
So that was my film anyway. Marek, your film.
I made a film, and
called Maths is Evil.
Yes. I started making this film literally about 3 months ago, and as I told our listeners, Dave McNeil plays the plumber. There's basically two plumbers in a house, and one is telling a throwaway story about his childhood and how he thought maths is evil. Unfortunately, leads to some quite sinister consequences.
Yeah.
But I started filming and talking about the haircut thing. Dave McNeil cut his hair really short the next day.
Why?
But so short that it was completely... You can see...
He should have complained to his agent.
Yeah, fired him from the film. And he didn't realise that it was a problem at all.
How much had you shot in the first day?
All the stuff in the kitchen.
Okay.
So suddenly, when the bitch scene changes for no reason, he'd have gone out of a door and his hair would have been short.
Fallen off.
There's loads of those changing location things in films where, usually at the beginning of a chase, where suddenly a character puts a coat on or takes one off because they've realised that they've shot all of this, the external stuff, and they didn't have a coat on. And then when they leave in the internal thing, they do have one on. So that people just inexplicably taking clothes off or putting them on as they run around places.
I watched The Bourne Legacy the other night, and there's a bit where the main characters are sitting in a car, and they've clearly had to explain. It's one of those, just, what's it called when you just explain what the plot is?
Exposition.
Exposition scene. Just to explain everything. But they've actually had to put it in afterwards because they're slightly more tanned and the lighting's slightly different.
They're a bit fatter.
So halfway through the... Yeah, they are. They're noticeably
different. One of them's holding an Oscar.
The makeup and lipstick is too red in it. It's a really bad continuity thing. But if you're watching The Bourne Legacy, but halfway through, when the two leads sitting in the car, there'll be a sort of cut to a different scene and the makeup will be slightly different and everyone will look a bit more tanned and podgy. And also, you'll notice that in Masters Evil as well.
Did you struggle with maths at school? Is that what inspired you?
I had a really scary maths teacher at school. I just thought of it when I was asleep and I thought that'd be quite interesting. And I didn't know whether it was going to be... It's not supposed to be funny or... It's just in between, you know, it's just...
Really liked the gag that the man steals his shoe and so he has to hop.
Yeah,
it's great,
but it's actually really hard thinking of all the shots. I mean, we sit here and criticise all these films. Doing it is so difficult, thinking of all the shots. But we are doing it ourselves rather than having a big crew.
That's the thing that mine lacks, is because I wouldn't know where to start with thinking up all the different shots that you need.
But all it is just drawing a comic book.
Mm.
It's as simple as that. Just drawing all the pictures and ticking off those pictures.
That's why comic books are so popular as sources for films now, because they've already storyboarded the whole thing. Sin City is pretty much a storyboard.
Yeah, exactly the same.
300 is exactly the same.
But apart from that, what else can I say about my film? I talked about this, the guts. I tried to use tomatoes, they didn't work. How do you make blood for a... Because I know how to make fake dog poo.
Right.
Or fake poo, which is really good, because you get your Mars... Well, actually, you don't get Mars bars, leave white lines in it. So peanut butter and cocoa.
And you feed that to a dog.
And you feed it to a dog, and that's it. But you actually get a plastic bag, you cut the corn around, squeeze it out.
Oh, lovely.
You're making your own anus. Plastic bag anus, yeah.
Fake blood is...
Food
colouring, red food colouring, golden syrup, and some corn flour if you want to thicken up a bit.
Yeah, or you can use glucose, is good for it. There's loads of different things you can
use
for blood.
It's mainly sugar-based, though.
But that's usually so that it's edible, because it might go in mouths and eyes and things.
Any liquidy sugar, so, you know, honey, corn syrup...
Nutella you can use, actually, if you were
diet
red.
And then,
brown blood.
Yeah.
Like the queen.
and some red food colouring, and, yeah, that's pretty much it.
So I like to do a zombie film, but that's quite a lot of makeup and blood, isn't it? A
lot of blood in a zombie film.
And I don't want to give away spoilers to the film, so there's no point in talking about it. I won't talk about other things.
My blood didn't come off. It wasn't until the next day that it all came off. I just had two washes.
That's the problem with red food colouring. It does stain skin.
Stains your skin a little bit.
It's very, very hard to make a fake blood that doesn't stain.
If only blood was different. I mean, that's why so many people make pornography more popular, because it's easier to wash off.
Is that why?
Right?
Yeah. In terms of the fluid genres,
it's easier.
Tell us about your film, David.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, I finished talking about my film.
I really liked your film, Merrick. I saw it again this morning after, because I was sort of running around trying to fix the terrible sound when it was on before.
It's quite weird when you make it. It's like doing an Edinburgh show. I mean, my film's all, it's just all right. It's just a bit odd. But you just forget, you lose all sense of perspective after a while, after you're sitting there editing, just putting, trying to get all the timing right. Now,
about your music. Marek did the music himself for his.
I did the music to mine.
Marek John Carpenter Larwood.
And it was just doing the... all the music is done with one finger on a keyboard in different different notes at different tempos and timing it all to... It sounds as though basically someone's thrown a cat at a keyboard or a child's doing it, but actually it took it probably took me at least half a day to do those sounds on it.
But I have
to learn more chords. Yeah.
If you want to do like proper horror music, get a Moog.
Yeah, GarageBand's quite good for stuff, but all the loops are the same, aren't they?
They're recognisable now, aren't they?
Probably used by Adam and Joe.
Yeah. Well, should we talk about my film?
Yeah.
I made a film called Buddy Movie, which is about what our dog Buddy gets up to whilst we're recording this podcast. And it turns out he goes on some kind of crazy magical adventure.
Did anybody recognise the music you used at the start for the Buddy Movie titles? Did you recognise
it? No, where was it from?
It was the title sequence of Funny Games.
The really horrific
one. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, that's traumatising.
It's great, isn't it? I was really pleased because Dave starts with my favourite sort of title.
Yeah,
the big red letters.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And I noticed that you just... the bit you recall when we filmed it, the bit you was me talking about being bald, you used.
Yeah, I did use that,
and
yeah.
And me being bald.
Well, actually, it...
But that wasn't the bit...
I wanted you looking relaxed and sort of before recording it, and the bit I ended up using was the bit of you actually talking to Danielle before you thought we'd started recording.
This is a bit like that sort of Ridley Scott Alien thing where he doesn't tell him about the bursting stump, doesn't tell all the actors. So yeah. You director duped us by making us sort of do some fake start.
Yeah, I did.
And then you used the bit from the podcast about the Die Hard one.
Yeah, yeah.
Why did you use that?
In all honesty?
Yeah.
Because... that was the only episode I still had the raw files of that didn't have the theme tune layered over the top.
But if you want to know what it's like where we're recording it now, you can watch Buddy the Movie.
Yeah.
You can see us, although we're not sitting in the right positions we normally sit in.
We cheated it.
But it's good fun. It's stupid as hell. I mean, basically the setup is Buddy eats a haunted sausage and releases a demon.
I think it's absolutely brilliant. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank
you. And I showed my girlfriend it, and she may watch it again.
But your girlfriend loves Buddy.
She's in love with Buddy as well. But I thoroughly...
Does she love Wetty and Wetty?
That's the name of the puppet, although it never comes up.
Oh, I thought he was brilliant. And the voice was brilliant. I thought Buddy did some amazing acting.
He's very well trained,
isn't he? He actually pulls all the different faces. I was convinced that I could tell... I thought he was actually... quizzical,
yeah.
Surprised, suspicious. That's more than most actors can do.
We've taught him to do that. We've got, do suspicious, do suspicious, good. And then when he does it, he gets a sausage.
Yeah.
He did go bonkers Friday night, though, because he had too much sausage.
Far too much sausage.
So, as you said, the live thing, you basically used, you fed Buddy sausages to get him to...
to reward him when he'd done things right. Because otherwise you can't maintain focus.
What would you help you personally as an actor in terms of reward if you did it right?
A yacht.
No, I think we'd use the exact same system.
But with money?
With actors. No, with...
yeah.
Well, no. Because
£10.
If every time you did a take, they give you a fiver. No, it...
That would be a really good way of doing it. So the director says, like, I've got £1,000 for this scene. We're all going to perform this scene, and whoever does the right thing does the best acting. Gets a share of it.
So no, it needs to be more condescending than that. If we all get through it, everyone gets £5.
I went to a film school class on Saturday, and basically what I seem to pick up from it is no one really cares what the actors do. It's all about making sure the lighting's in the right place and the camera angle.
Absolutely,
right.
The actors are mostly ignored in
people
most productions.
People don't really care. It's like, well, if the actor's done an all right take, we'll use
but
it.
But the brilliant directors have always cared. Like, if you read about how Kubrick dealt with actors,
yeah, reading about Kubrick now, I think he just sounds like he was on the ball.
I think he probably was.
There's two different types of directors and stuff. We do acting and stuff like that. There's some people I've worked with.
Yeah.
There's like the theatre ones who've gone into TV who are all performance based, who don't know anything about the technical side of it. Or there's some just purely sort of gifted technically cinematographers.
Ridley Scott.
Yeah, who don't know. They don't know. They're quite almost sort of on the scale.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They don't know how to act, to deal with actors. I've been on a set with something which I thought was awful and no one was getting any notes. Loads of different performances.
Yeah.
And the director never went, do you want to tell me that? Or maybe he did, but that way. Obviously he didn't, because it was all different.
Yeah.
But one I thought was really... I worked with one, but I won't say his name, but I thought he was really good. I will say, Matt Lipsey. He's done a lot of British television things. He was great just talking to people and behaving differently around different performers and getting them to say, do things differently with quite big, sort of famous performers. So that's our films. Obviously this is a bit weird if you haven't watched them, so go to the Facebook site.
Go to facebook.com/filmfandango and you'll find all three of the movies there. Alternatively, you can go to YouTube and search for either Danielle Ward Mayford, Marek Larwood, Matt is Evil, or David Reed, Buddy Movie.
That was for anybody who didn't understand the concept of searching for a video on YouTube.
I was just reminding them what the names of the things were, you know, being helpful. Yes, and if you'd like to get in touch about them, then leave us a message on the Facebook wall or email us.
At Twitter.
No, email us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com. Okay. Or you can tweet us.
At filmfandango.
I tell you what, I'd love to read out some letters, wouldn't you?
Oh, I'd love to, Marek. But are there any?
Yes, there are. There are lots. And first of all, we should thank our friends from Guatemala.
Yes.
Who came to the live podcast.
Fernando and Jocelyn came to the live podcast all the way from Guatemala.
This is genuinely true.
Where's their email gone?
Well, we've got recordings of a few comments. Here's what we'll try and play now.
Yes.
This is Fernando's assessment of the Film Fandango night. You can hear it in this bit here. Boop.
Buenas noches, excelente show. Yeah. Excelente show, muy contento de estar acá y de ver los films cortos que prepararon para esta noche. Contento también de verlos en vivo después de escuchar el podcast en Absolute Radio y ahora el propio podcast que tienen. Bueno, es la página oficial que tienen ahora para el podcast. Eso es lo que tengo que decir. Felicitaciones.
All I knew is that he said that I was his favourite and he liked my friend the best.
So that was Fernando. For those who don't speak Spanish, he said, broadly speaking, it's really great to be here in London for the live show and see your short films that each of you made. It's been great so far. We have been listening since the podcast started with Absolute Radio and now on your very own programme. It's an excellent show. So thank you, Fernando and Jocelyn. They claim they were here on a visit anyway, but I think they were just being coy. They definitely came all the way to the UK just for that one night.
I've got an email from Sasha Mobley.
Sasha Mobley.
I'm not going to do an accent. It's really long email. I'll probably cut it as I go. Dear Film Fandango, I hope it's not too late to warn you about the very awful film experience called Man of Steel.
Oh.
Yeah.
Superman anger.
I had the option of seeing it in either 3D, IMAX, or just the regular. All right, and fancy, showing off. They tried to make up for the sensory deprivation of the regular theatre by turning the volume up traumatically loud. Two main achievements of the film. One, they finally did justice to heat ray vision in a way that not even the comics ever did. Oh, well, that's...
interesting.
Bravo. Two, the art department get the record for designing endless variations of Kryptonian vehicles and objects resembling genitalia in homage to Flesh Gordon, especially Phallic with a pod sending Zod and Co. to the Phantom Zone. Is there a marketing tie-in with a sex shop? An endless parade of humorous middle-aged Hollywood patriarchs grandstanding intoning father figures, spewing eugenic and pro-life nonsense alleviated only by ridiculously boring CGI action sequences that I wish I could just be cut entirely and replaced with porn. Pornography. Well, I'm not sure I should have started reading this email out. No, this is very interesting. I wanted to warn Danielle, especially because I know how sensitive she is to loud noises. I'm not sensitive to them.
You're very sensitive to loud noises.
No, I just think it's a cheap device to use if you're making a horror film.
You used that in your film. But it was ironic too, wasn't it?
Yeah, like Ricky Gervais would have done it. Man of Steel... I don't understand why we've got a dark Superman.
They want to rival Marvel's ability to do lots of franchises that meet in one big franchise called the Avengers. And the only... Yes, buddy. The only intellectual property DC have of that kind, or their biggest one, is the Justice League, which is... the Avengers for the DC world that has Batman and Superman and others in it. And
it's Spider-Man in it.
No, he's Marvel.
Oh.
We'll get on to that.
Is Bumming Man in it?
Bumming Man is only from Larwood Comics.
Wonder Woman's in it, isn't she?
Wonder Woman is the other big main one. But they have a real problem is their worlds don't really mesh tonally in terms of the movies they've had made. So
that's where you get Bumming Man.
They've darkened Superman to
but
try and make
the
But
you know
where
the worlds don't mesh? Because they're alternate universes, practically. Gotham City
oh, not
is
this again.
Metropolis. It's the same place.
Well, they
but
claim
it's darker
different.
Version.
Well, they're different cities, but that's not the problem.
But they're not,
the
they're
problem
both
is
New York.
One guy's a billionaire who punches criminals, and the other one is an alien god who can turn back time and do
also,
all sorts
Batman's
of things.
Batman's allowed to be dark. He's ever said his parents are dead. Yeah. Superman, his parents are also dead, but he's got.
Aquaman can be dark because all of his friends are fish. And he can only solve underwater crime.
Bumming Man is a billionaire and also an alien.
Is he?
Yes.
Well, if anyone has seen Man of Steel and wants to tell us what it's like, I'm still in two minds about whether I'm going to go and see it. So do email us. Have we got more letters?
Yes, I've got one right here. Here we go. Hello, this is Connor from Liverpool. The main reason I wanted to write in... was because I wanted to hear one of you guys try a Scouse accent. But I thought I would recommend some films as well. Mulholland Drive, Cool Hand Luke, Delicatessen.
You know what's interesting about all those films? I have started watching all of them and not got through them.
I really like... Cool Hand Luke's very good, and Mulholland Drive.
Mulholland Drive's very good. Delicatessen's very good.
I haven't seen that since it first came out.
That?
I was about 5 years old, I think. Thanks for that. Yes, watch all of those films that Con recommended.
Watch them. Now, we had a competition last night at Film Fandango Live, which we generously donated our own DVDs as a prize, didn't we?
Yeah.
I donated Starship Troopers.
A flipper version.
A flipper version, which probably is worth quite a lot on eBay, I would have thought.
I'd never even heard of this flipper version.
Yeah, when DVDs first came out, before they were dual layer, they were flippers and you had to turn them over like a vinyl.
We'll be honest, Matt, we just looked for things that we had two copies of, and Starship Troopers was one of them. Have we got two copies of The Descent?
I think so.
You didn't give that away, you gave away the
ward.
But that's why... Because we live together, we knew if we gave away one copy of Starship Troopers, we already had another copy, because we've got a copy each.
Okay, so 2 minus 1 equals 1. What are you trying to tell me? If you have 2 DVDs and you take away 1 DVD, there's 1 DVD left.
That's what we're trying to tell you.
I don't understand this concept.
I gave away The Ward, a film that I have never seen. John Carpenter's The Ward.
Yeah, I've not heard good things. He's sort of gone off the boil, hasn't he, Carpenter?
He didn't win an award for it, did he?
No, he didn't.
And you gave away
24-hour Party People, which I watched the other week.
And we've talked about it, and it's a wonderful, wonderful film. And these DVDs were won by Jack Heron?
I don't want to know his surname.
Not Jack Cooper.
His name is Jack, and he was very nice, and he was wearing a t-shirt.
He was really good looking.
He was wearing a t-shirt with, what does it say on it?
Easy Rider.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jack Henderson was his name.
Looking for a man, come and meet Jack Henderson. I thought he was really
attractive. Stop pimping out our listeners.
He's by himself and he was really good looking.
But maybe you should talk about what he was like as a person. Yeah. It's not all
he
about.
Was with his friend Alex as well.
Yeah.
He wasn't by himself.
I know. I'm just.
Okay. Well, I spoke to Jack. He was very nice.
I mean, you're not doing this just to look at good-looking people.
Clearly not.
Is that why you're making this podcast? To try and meet young men in tight T-shirts?
One.
Oh, well. Well, fair play. Sorry.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, this is what Jack had to say for himself.
Have you seen all the films that we gave you?
The only one I haven't seen is The Wards. It is on my to-see list.
I haven't seen it, and I owned it.
I've heard mixed reviews, but I'm like I said, like John Corbett is my second favourite director, so I'm pretty excited to see it.
A good win, then.
So a good win, but I do really like 24-Hour Party People.
So what's your favourite John Carpenter film?
My favourite John Carpenter film? That's actually a really hard question. Can I do a top three?
Yep.
Okay, Assault on Precinct 13.
Yep.
Big Trouble in Little China. An underappreciated masterpiece, I think. And also the same as They Live for that.
I've not seen They Live.
Have you not?
No.
But They Live is really cool. It's just... It's a really original idea, actually. I can't believe it. It was 88, so I can't believe no one had ever done that before. It's when he gets the glasses and you can see that.
Right, well, RoboCop. We saw RoboCop, didn't we?
Not just us, but all 44 people who came along.
All 70 people in that room.
Yeah. All the 8 billion people who came along came to watch RoboCop.
All the people, so many people.
Not that many people.
Not that many, but we had some people. And RoboCop, I've not seen it in a while. I bloody love it, though. It just confirmed for me what a good film it is.
It's strange when you watch these films. I was talking to quite a lot of people afterwards, and they said the Ed 209, which is the famous robot in it.
Yes.
Looking back, I didn't remember it being that much... Like a stop motion robot.
Yeah, it's proper Ray Harryhausen stuff.
Yeah,
isn't
a couple
it?
Of the guys, two of the mathematicians I was talking to, very nice men, said it after it was Ray Harryhausen, but it's not actually him. It's just
no, it's very much in his style.
Yeah,
of that fighting things that aren't there. You know, the famous skeleton scene from Jason and the Argonauts is
now they
particularly
just get
strong.
Andy Serkis to put on a leotard.
It's true.
Him literally Andy Serkis with his whole body of nipples, whatever it is, jumping around.
I'd forgotten how much Ed 209 is actually a comic character in this first one. He's not really the villain. He's light relief. He's only got comedy routines, really.
Yeah. All I remembered it was there's great set pieces I remembered. I didn't really remember the rest of the film. Just the big set pieces in this, which always there are great ones. I didn't remember, and a lot of people commented on our Facebook wall as well and on Twitter that they didn't realise how sort of tongue in cheek and funny it is. Because we, obviously, our generation watched it when we were like 14, 15 as an action film.
Yeah.
And now it's quite a sort of almost camp comedy, would you say?
But it's 80s, isn't it? It's got an 70s, late 70s, early 80s feel to it, which is, we've lost that in our films. And certainly that could never be more stark than in the remakes we've been making of those films. I mean, Total Recall, I didn't see it, but I've talked to people who did. And from what I've heard, it was humourless, the remake of Total Recall, which, of course, was a Verhoeven film and very much in the exact same style of its sort of tongue-in-cheek, but also quite clever. It's satirical. It's about something.
But
it's not just nonsense.
Style as well. I mean, yeah. If you think of his big action films as just action films, then you're missing.
Yeah, you're quite wrong.
As a director, it's because he puts in. I mean, what he's really good at is the stupid satirical adverts.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten how many of those are in RoboCop, because you remember Starship Troopers for having them all in there.
Do you want to know more? Yeah, but RoboCop's got the I'd buy that for a dollar, and then loads of newsreels and adverts for
and
products
great
and things.
At that sort of thing.
There's a great thing that you told me about the Twitter
What was that?
About the RoboCop.
Oh yeah, yeah. If you tweet anything with the word RoboCop in it, there's an account that replies to you from that mustachioed guy who's in the comedies on the TVs. And he just replies to you, "I'd buy that for a dollar."
Brilliant.
Yeah. Everything you ever put RoboCop in.
How would you describe the Verhoeven style? It's a bit. It's not like Cronenberg-y, but it's a weird. There's a similar feel to it. I don't know if it's all shot in a Pacific era. But that sort of futuristic, but quite.
But he does have the marriage of man and machine. I mean, obviously, RoboCop literally does that, but also with the technology side of things. I mean, I don't know, because also Verhoeven made Showgirls, which doesn't do any of this, but it still is a satire of that. I mean, isn't Verhoeven famously put more chitch in it? I want to see more chitch in this.
Yeah, but it's. I mean, you sort of have to view his sex films and his sci-fi separately, I think.
In Starship Troopers, he's got like a naked shower scene for no real...
No, well, the interesting thing is, it's the same in RoboCop as well. And it's very interesting because he's done it... He's not...
Just put more titch in it.
It's not gratuitous. It is and it isn't. Because in both films, there's just like... co-ed, it's not educational, but shared showers. But it's completely unsexual for the characters involved. That's what's sort of interesting about it. He's using it to tell a story. In both Starship Troopers and RoboCop, it's just naked people talking about their careers. That's all they're talking about. And they're so desexualized and just sort of career-driven. It's quite interesting.
Like
it's
in the future dystopia,
yeah.
There is no real gender divide.
And maybe there's no real sexual desire either, other than towards prostitutes in his films.
Yeah,
it's in a very American dystopia of there's only pornography and prostitution, and there's no real wholesome sex anymore.
Isn't it lovely how innocent RoboCop is?
He's a very innocent man. I really love.
Well, he eats up baby food.
Yeah, like that's the point of him, isn't it? I mean, there's loads of it in there. Peter Weller, I think, does a fantastic job. You forget that he is doing the robot, but making it such an inhabited character.
When we're at school, we watch RoboCop, and I was talking to people up this, we tried to work out how to do RoboCop walk, because we thought it was the neck first, and then moving the body as a separate...
But it's sometimes the other way around.
Yes, because there's one moment when he walks down the corridor, and I thought, it's neck first, then the body, and then he did the body first, then the neck. It's just... All this time we were doing neck then body at school, we were completely wrong.
It was a great shame that in Star Trek Into Darkness, Admiral RoboCop didn't just, as an in-joke, walk that way in one shot or something.
It's a brilliant walk.
Yeah. And the whole thing of his partner recognises him because he does the gun spinny thing, which is only an affectation to please his kid and stuff.
Yeah, and his flashbacks are... So sort of mawkish they are, purposely comical, aren't they?
Yes. I love how Verhoeven makes almost everyone super earnest, but then they're made to look ridiculous for being so earnest, whereas other filmmakers wouldn't. They would just want their characters to all look cool. Like, he particularly, in this era, he loved his henchmen to be bald guys with massive glasses. It's the same in Total Recall as well. Michael Ironside's sidekick is a bald guy with massive glasses.
I've mentioned this before on the podcast, and I mentioned it last night as well. The difference between the TV edit of RoboCop, which was the only version that I'd seen until we went to the Prince Charles Cinema a couple of years ago to see RoboCop at the cinema, it's a different film. Like, it's so different. It's not even Die Hard badly dubbing the swearing out.
Yeah.
It is an entirely different...
But they do that in RoboCop as well. As well as cutting scenes entirely, the graphically violent ones, they redubbed it to have no swearing in as well.
I mean, because the toxic waste scene from RoboCop...
It's one of the best scenes.
It's absolutely amazingly horrific, and I'd never seen it.
Yeah.
Until I was in my 30s.
I know.
There is someone tweeted about, I think it's called RoboCop Edited and Redubbed for TV. Look up on YouTube one of the redub things. I think, or can someone find it, put it on our Facebook page?
Yeah.
And they show the original next to the dubbing. And there's some of the greatest bits of dubbing in this film ever. So it's worth just watch the original film, then watch, go to YouTube and watch Putin Robocop dubbed, and you'll see the remarkable differences between the Funster and stuff like that they call people. Yeah. It's great.
Monkey Funster.
Yeah, I thought it was Muddy Funster.
I'm
sure it was. There's a scene in the toilets where Dick Jones and the other guy are arguing, and they're great villains. They're both
so
great actors.
So good. I mean, the guy playing Dick Jones is the same villain he plays Cohagen in Total Recall.
He's a Beverly Hills Cop boss, isn't
he,
as well?
He's one of the best 80s douches in cinema, I think. Him and actually the guy who is the young up-and-coming guy at OCP who is in charge of the Robocop program is also a brilliant 80s douche.
How come in the 80s they're really good at coming up with corporate brands and we don't get that anymore?
In OCP or
OCP,
the Weyland-Yutani Corporation.
Weyland-Yutani and Nexus 6 that sort of business. And now there just isn't that care and attention put in.
It's Ronnie Cox who plays... Dick Jones, and the other great actor is Miguel Ferrer, who plays Bob Morton. You recognise his face, he's been in loads of stuff.
He's in Hot Shots Part Deux as the guy who Topper Harley teaches to kill again, and that's his emotional arc.
He's brilliant.
He's really good.
No one at the moment seems to be making films that are really fun sort of Saturday night films that are also clever. It doesn't seem to be that. They either have to make action films that are so it's just action
superhero one, just relentless superhero films,
or they're
it's the same story over and over again,
or they're a bit, you know, sincere, and they're a bit too, yes, a guy going through really tough things and he has to come through the other side. There's no big, dumb but clever.
There's no Die Hard. There's no film that feels like Die Hard.
Yeah, but there were loads, weren't there? Like this, Robocop, Total Recall, a Beverly Hills Cop I loved as well, and that came out.
Yeah,
all
great.
These sort of fun...
Those big Saturday night films.
Yeah, exactly what you said, basically.
Exactly what I said.
But even I'd class sort of Gremlins in that genre as well, of like, it's got proper horror in it, but it's also got its tongue in its cheek, and it's very silly and funny at the same time.
I mean, if I was like 18 now, I don't think I'd go to the cinema. I don't think I'd be a film fan.
But the 80 cinema thing again this year, like Robocop and Gremlins, are much better than the stuff that's coming out now.
Yeah.
Much better. I've got a book where I've put down every single mark of each film I've seen this year.
Yeah.
So at the end of the year, I can tell you exactly how many films I've seen and what are the best films. That's something to look forward to, isn't it?
There are good films being made, but they're not the big blockbusters. The blockbusters are so disappointing these days. That's the thing. I want to go and see a blockbuster that I can really love and come out of the cinema thinking that was great because it was big and stupid but also clever and witty, and you just don't get that.
Ghost Protocol was at least fun.
Yes,
because Brad Bird directed it and he brought in some of the fun from Pixar. There's still not as much as 80s movies had, but you know, at least there was some of it there.
Yeah, no, Ghost Protocol was actually probably the last big silly film
I've not seen that.
It's fun.
Oh, it's like the IMAX Burj Khalifa bit.
Great.
So how many Davids would you give Robocop?
10.
I think I give it 10. I think it's one of my 10s.
And give it...
Come on, Mary.
I think I'd give it a 9.
What's your favourite Verhoeven?
Showgirls. I think Robocop and Showgirls.
Showgirls is my favourite.
Basically, I'd like the top half of Robocop with the bottom half of Showgirls.
Oh. But where would she keep her gun?
Mm.
Robocop would have a scene where he proves he's got his period.
Oh yeah.
And he'd rub ice on his breastplate.
But when I've seen Showgirls, it's always been really enjoyable.
Showgirls is a really,
it's
really
a
good
preposterous film. It's so stupid, I sort of love it. But yeah, I think Robocop's my favourite Verhoeven, and then I'd probably put Total Recall and Starship Troopers equally next.
Yeah, I really enjoyed both of those. Yeah, great. And Showgirls that would be a cult hit though, isn't it? Showgirls.
Yeah.
It shouldn't really be. Did it win Razzies and stuff like that?
I think it might have done. But when you put it up against the other silly exploitation things like Striptease, and I watched Burlesque. I don't know why I watched Burlesque. the Christina Aguilera, Cher, Stanley Tucci film. which is a bit like
terrible.
That. Showgirls is so much better because it's really clever.
Mm. It's just fun. It's fun, isn't it?
What made me want to watch Showgirls was Adam and Joe's show toys spoof of it.
Yeah, I've not seen
good.
That.
It was good.
So that's about it, is it? Isn't it?
Yeah.
I've got to saw a really great film, which I haven't seen before. I should have seen.
What's that?
It's one of the best films I've seen this year. A Serious Man, Coen Brothers.
Oh yes.
That got absolutely panned, didn't it?
He got a Bromley for the best. He got nominated for Best Picture.
Oh, did it?
I think it's just up there. It's up there with all
really?
The.
Really, I didn't see it. It was one of those who just sort of passed me by. I
it's
thought,
really
oh, I've got to go
you
see that.
You must
and then...
get that out. I thought it was a great bit of cinematography.
Really interesting trailer. Like the rhythmic trailer.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just thought it was all the it shows all the small things. You're sick of watching these action films, which people talked about, and noisy films. It's all this. It's humour in the odd bits of inflections and looks and small details, and it looks beautiful.
Are any of you excited about Alpha Papa?
I always worry about British transfer of TV characters to a movie, but
I was thinking of Barbara Popper or something, some of the old 70s kids thing, but I realise you're talking about
Alan Partridge.
Yes, I am very excited about it.
I hope it'll be funny, yeah.
I mean, it's still going to be better than anything else that comes out that week.
Yeah,
obviously. But yeah, I know what you mean about transferring.
It's movie comedy, so I think it, for some reason it's really, really hard to do. And it,
because they're completely different scales.
Yes.
Like the humour from Alan Partridge is different from the humour. But you know what? I mean,
They're the best people, and it's the same people still doing it, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Peter Bainham has, you know, he's been nominated for Oscars for his comedy writing for films now. So, you know, he's got, there's experience there. It's not just going to be a long TV episode.
Yeah.
No, I am looking forward to it.
And there's that World War Z. I might have to go and watch it.
To, yeah.
I think I might go and see that. Joss Whedon's Much Ado About Nothing is out this week as well, which looks interesting.
I hate film Shakespeare things.
But it's got Amy Acker in it.
Yeah.
And she Acker Bilk's daughter.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, she'll wrap it up.
He calls her his little clarinet. Well, we'll be back next week with more films. So in the meantime, why not think about some stuff and email us at dearfilmfandango@gmail.com and watch our short films. We spent, you know, in total, probably a week on them. So,
I think more than that.
You think?
Yeah.
I am really happy to concede that mine isn't the best. I found it a bit rude. Someone posted under one of them, oh, they'll have to do well to beat these. The other two will have to do well to beat this. It's not a competition.
Not a competition, but the buddy film is the best.
Marek's is the second best.
So, but yours is just one shot.
Yeah.
It's not a competition. It's all subjective.
Well, watch them and tell us what you think.
And thank you to all the people who came along to our live night.
Yes, hopefully. It was a great success. Well, more importantly, we had a lovely time. So that means we'll probably do it again sometime.
Oh, and tell us what you would like to see maybe in a live night would help us
out. Yeah, what film would you want to see on the big screen? Tell us. Tell us and hopefully we'll put it on. All right, we will be back next week. Keep watching the films. Bye.
Bye. Bye now.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.